This is Mission Possible, and this week's podcast interview was an opportunity I didn't want to miss. During my recent travels, I had the chance to interview the father of my sister's child. It was unexpected, and I thought, he's a returning citizen. He's doing some positive things, and he's helping to raise my niece. Let's do it. So please, take a listen. It's a pleasure for me to sit down with you. This is Mission Possible podcast, and we are helping to change the way the nation sees returning citizens by sharing remarkable success stories of folks that have been incarcerated, now out, living life. And so today, Wendell Jones, who served over 8 years, has children and now working. I have the pleasure of sitting down with him to just talk about his life and for our audience to be able to hear a slice of what's going on with him. So thank you for coming to the show and for the transparency that you will provide in this time. Okay, so Wendell, I always start the show out with just asking my guests to give me just a little background on their incarceration. So maybe, you know, how long you were in, what was maybe, if anything that you feel like was going on in your life, you know, prior to that. But then kind of catch us up so we now know what was happening prior to you being or sitting here today.
All right. So, well, I got incarcerated when I was 20, right before I turned 21 years old. My girl was 3 months pregnant at the time with my daughter. And so I ended up getting incarcerated, doing 8.5 years in the federal penitentiary. And my daughter, you know, I met her on a visit because my girl was 3 months pregnant. So she ended up having her when I was in the county. So throughout my whole time while I was in prison, I took different classes. Like I took a corresponding course for Ashworth College for carpentry and construction. I just stayed focused and tried to focus on my child, plan for the future for when I get out. I took a drill program for 9 months over like 500 hours of residential treatment. So then they practiced for reentry. I took different workshops. I did interviews, more job fairs. So I practiced for the world for prepare for when I get out, but it was rough times in prison too. Like, it wasn't just always taking classes and doing that. Sometimes you've been on lockdown, can't call your family, can't communicate to the outside. All you can do is wait on mail. You may be on lockdown a week, but luckily I was in the medium, so, you know, it never was this hard, but some people who was in the max got it even harder because they may be locked down 2-3 months, come out for a week, locked down another 2 months, like, so. They probably spend their whole year, 9 months on lockdown, 3 months out. So, you know, it's harder for those guys, but fortunately, I ain't have to go through that. But so,
what would you say was maybe one or two of the hardest things you had to deal with being locked up?
One of the hardest things I had to deal with, like, not being able to be there for my child. You know, physically, I was there a little mentally, you know, verbally, but not being there to see her grow up. So that was mostly the hardest thing. Because when I got out, she was almost going on 8 years old.
Wow.
So that was the hardest thing of being locked up. And then another thing, you know, just being away from family.
Sure.
You want to get back to your family, want to get back to things. So that was the hardest two things. So, you know, while you're there, you try to make the best that you can make it. So I just really, like, I spent a lot of time sometimes gambling, you know, just to keep my mind occupied. But then if I'm not doing gambling, that's why I try to take classes or work out. I spent a lot of time working out. That was a good stress reliever.
Okay.
So I worked out. Then if I ain't working out, I was gambling. If I wasn't gambling, I was in the class. But I started prioritizing things more. Like, I could say more so, like, my last 18 months. Because I knew it was time. Like, if I ain't going to change here, I ain't going to be able to change when I get out. So the change really started on the inside. Really don't change when you walk out the door, like, I'm going to do this when I get out. It ain't going to just work like that because you're used to not doing it. So, like, my last 9 months, I had a job in the hospital, 8 hours a day, only making $52 a month. But, you know, I was there just practicing. I wasn't the one looking for, like, I'm doing this now for this. I'm just doing it to be used to working.
Sure.
Before then, I ain't never had a job.
Oh, wow. I know you said that you knew that you were going to be getting out. But can you tell me or tell us what you were thinking and what made you decide, I need to get ready?
Oh, what really made me think, like, I need to get ready and get myself together, because it was like, if you don't get ready now, you ain't going to get ready at all. And I knew, like, I already missed 8 years of my daughter's life, you know, 7 at the time of her life. Who want to miss more? So it was more so. Then I'm looking like my grandma was there my whole time. So she's older. She's 83. So I was like, man, I can't go back to jail. That'll destroy her. It already destroyed her the first time. So I start thinking more like that. You know, I got older and start thinking more about what life. So that's mm-hmm. what made me tighten up and get myself together.
It's beautiful. That's beautiful. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you from your perspective, how incarceration impacts inmates. But what about some of the other guys? You know, do you remember some of the things that maybe they said about if they had children on the outside?
Yeah. Like when I first went there, I first get to the federal penitentiary. I'm 22 years old at this time because I done turned 21. No, I was 21, turning 22. My cellmate they put me in, he got life plus 180 years. You know, his son, wow. At the time, I was old enough to be his son. His son was like a year younger than me. He was going to college, happened to be in Minnesota. This dude from Milwaukee. And so, like, he used to always talk about, like, when I get out, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And I used to be like, man, what's this dude talking about when he get out? He ain't going to never get out, but he had hope. So it impacted him, you know, a lot. But then I remember by the time, because I was there for him for a while. So by the time, at that time, he's at, like, 15 years in. So by the time he got to like 20 years in, his son had graduated college and he really kind of like just settled in like, well, I know I'm going to be here, but at least, I helped my son through college because he ran a store in there. You know, he was helping as much as he could with his son for college. He might send him $200-$300 a month, but, you know, something be nothing.
Wow.
So it impacted him a lot, you know, because this guy was, he knew he had to be there the rest of his life.
Right.
Wasn't no turning back, so. Had a lot of hate. I done seen guys die in there. You know what I mean? They had some time and they had life and end up serving it there. Don't nobody want to go out like that. So that's kind of more what helped me to get myself together. And then it's resources. You know, your counselor really could help you if you go ask them, but they're not going to help you if you don't ask.
Okay. Okay. So they are available.
Are available. Like, you know, we look at it as like, oh, my probation or this person, they the police. So you don't really want to ask them for help, but they resources to help you if you really need them, you know, fire some employment or grants or whatever.
Okay, that's good. Let's switch to now you're getting ready to get out, so you've been preparing to get out. And a lot of guys talk about the challenges that they have once they do get out. So talk about what was it like for you when you were leaving?
Yeah, when I got out, I really, you know, I've been gone 8.5 years. There's nothing that I have, you know what I mean? So I got out, went to the halfway house, and I started looking for employment. But it wasn't just like, I know I had help with resumes because I practiced. They helped me in prison to get a resume, but they also helped me in the halfway house. So I took a resume, but then my cousin happened to be working at this job, building railings and decks. And so I asked him, like, trying to get a job. And he was cool with the manager, with the boss, so. That's how I really ended up starting out my first job. It was just, I luckily knew someone, but I had a resume because I done did carpentry and construction. I got certified, so I had a resume, but it really wasn't much I could put on there. You know, I've been gone 8.5 years.
Did you get certified while you were locked up?
Yeah, I got certified. I graduated in it through Ashworth. So.
That's good.
But then I never even really took on in that field since I've been out because it was just like, I knew I could lean on it, but I always really wanted, like, I really wanted to do personal training. But I knew I wasn't certified in it, and then at the time, I need a job now. So I knew how to, they asked me, you know how to use a tape measure? Yeah, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it was easy for me to build the railings and decks because I was assembling it. I wasn't just welding it, but I was assembling for railings and decks. So I started out with that job, and then went from there. I learned the shipping and receiving in there. And then just started from there, worked there for like a year, almost a year. Then I ended up switching over, getting a job with Catholic Charities. So, because I felt like, you know, I mean, I done took from the community, might as well try to get back to the shelter and try to help as much as I could. Then it was just, I know the struggle, you know, for being in prison. So a lot of those people down there, homeless, you know, fresh out of prison, really ain't had no support. So I felt like by me delivering the food for them or picking up donations, because that's what I did. You know, it was a step closer to help them, you know what I mean? To try to get better, at least they could survive and be warm and have a place for shelter while they are homeless.
Wow, that's beautiful. It really is. There are a lot of guys that listen to this podcast, and so I want you to speak to them ones that they could be on the inside, or maybe they're just getting out. What would be a couple pieces of advice that you would give to them now that you're on the other side?
Now on the other side is like, you know, use your time wisely. While you're in there, use your time wisely. You know, do much as you could to prepare for when you get out. Like, I did a lot of wasted time, you know, just sitting on the poker table and sitting watching TV. You know, working out, yeah, it's good for your health and all, but it really, you need to prepare and plan for what you want to do and what you want to do for when you get out. Because if you don't change in there, you're not just going to walk out the door and be like, hey, I'm going to do this now. I'm going to start working, or I'm going to read this book, or, you know, I'm going to educate myself on this. So try to educate yourself as much as you could in there. And then ask for resources. Like, when you get out, one thing you can always sell in a job interview is because they give you a work tax credit. Okay. So up for $5,000.
That's right.
So, you know, you tell the job, hey, I can give you $5,000 worth of labor. You do your $5,000 worth of labor, but sell yourself while you're there. You know what I mean? You're working $5,000, they got free money, so they're bound to take it to hire you on, because some jobs need to hire fellas anyway.
Right.
So.
That's good. That's real good. I want to go back to children. I've been talking a lot about how kids, how our children are impacted, how our communities are impacted by mass incarceration. And then, we have 4.5 million returning citizens, ex-offenders living in our country. And that's like over 9 million people that are connected to folks that have been incarcerated. So it's impacting our communities a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you believe, or how you believe incarceration has impacted your child and then maybe other children. But speak to your...
Yeah. Like, I feel it impacted my child because she felt like, you know, we was distant. Like, she didn't have a dad. Like, she felt left out. That's how kids feel, you know. They got a locked up parent. They feel left out. Like, well, why ain't got a dad? This person got a dad. Or why ain't got a mom? This person got a mom. So that impacted them, you know, mentally, because they don't know the aspect. They really can't understand it till they probably get old enough to understand, like, oh, you was locked up because you did something bad. But at the time, they're a child, so they don't know. So they feel lonely. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you got to try to make sure you be that figure in their life so they don't feel that loneliness.
Mm-hmm. And so as now that you've gotten out, how do you balance it? Because I know guys talk a little bit about, okay, you're trying to work and you're trying to live. And then you have kids. How can you balance all of that so that maybe you can try to make up for that time?
Yeah, it's going to be hard to make up for, like, lost time because the time has passed. But you spend as much time as you possibly could while you're out, you know. Like you say, you know, you got work. Then, you know, you've been locked up, so you just want to do stuff on your own. Mm-hmm. But then you got your kids' time. So even if it's one day or 2 days out the week, you know, you're going spend time with your kids, spend that time with them, or even if something small, from picking up to school, dropping them off, at least y'all spent a little time together that day, and then you go on about your day, you know, if you can fit into, you know, to fit it in with your kids. But
right. And
especially if, like, you know, you're not living with them, because right. then they make it distant. So, you know, you try to make sure you at least see them a few times out the week so their mom can take a load off of them. And then you can pick up a lost time.
Yes, that's true. And obviously, you know, people always want quantity. They want more time, but quality, you know, even if you can, if you're not living with them and you may be able to get a couple of times a week, that in that time, you want it to be
make the best of it.
Yes. And that so they feel that they're loved and valued, because it's so important.
Yes. But yes, that's the main thing, making the best of the time that y'all do spend together. Because like you said, like, yeah, you can pick them up, but pick them up and drop them off really don't mean nothing if you're really not having a conversation or doing anything that's, you know, that's going to help y'all grow onto each other.
Exactly. Because you can pick a child up and be on the phone the whole time.
Yeah,
and I've seen it a lot. And they're not paying any attention to the child. And the child feels like they're
separated from
you. Exactly. Them. Exactly. That's good. I want you to go back. I know you mentioned your grandmother, and I have a soft spot for seniors in my life as well. But I want you to talk about maybe one thing that if you could do differently from your past, what would that be? If you had the ability to be able to go back in time.
If I could go back in time, one thing I would have did different, like, I'm not going to, like, I enjoy the things I was doing at the time because, you know, I was living life. Like, I also went to jail for selling drugs, so I wasn't complaining because I was enjoying it at the time. But if I was doing, if I could do something differently, I'd be more honest with my grandma because she didn't know what was going on with me. Like, she, if I went to college, she would have had my back 100%. Whatever I did, she would have had my back 100%. So I would have been more honest with my grandma and with my parents, you know, what was going on with my life, instead of, you know, keeping it distant from lying. Because then when I ended up going to jail, it was a shock because it was like, oh, I thought you was doing this. Because my grandma, she lived in a whole other state. I grew up in Minnesota. She lived in Chicago. So she really can't see what I'm doing. She just know about what I'm telling. And she had my back 100%. So if I could have did it differently, I gave them people 8 years. I would have gave the college 8 years.
Wow. Okay. That's beautiful. Beautiful. Maybe this would be the second to the last question, but I want to know why you did this interview. I mean, I know we kind of came around about in terms of somebody knew you and then it fit perfectly for me to be able to interview you. But why overall did you agree?
I really agreed to this interview because, like, it just happened to be, I was in a car with my friend. He was going to meet his cousin. And we just happened to be by the federal courthouse. And I was just telling him about it, like, man, you know, we just reminiscing. I'm just telling him about it, like, from when I first went in, like, how you go underground and everything, Black Keep Us. And then, so by the time we pick up his cousin, 5 minutes later, she mentioned it. And I was like, I do need to tell my story to somebody. Because, like, now, you know, I got started out a career. I'm a Ralph sales representative for Frito, so I'm doing all right for myself now, and I feel good about it. So I'm like, I do need to tell my story because, you know, it's a chance. You can't just give up. Because, like, I seen the job for Frito. I didn't think I was going to get it. Like, start out $52,000 a year. I was like, apply for it. You know what I mean? So then I went into the interview. I got an interview. They gave me a questionnaire first. Then I got an interview. Then I marked myself at the interview. So now I'm starting out a career with him, and I look, I'm like, man, it's 2 years after. Well, I've been there, like, at the time, I was out of jail, like, a year and a half.
Okay.
So right now, I'm out 2.5 years. At the time, I'm like, a year and a half later, starting out making 50-some thousand, I'm doing all right. You know what I mean? I didn't plan that. Like, I was in jail, I was like, yeah, I ain't gonna take a job less than $20 an hour, but what can I show them for not less than $20 an hour, you know? So it was a blessing. I ended up starting out probably like $14 an hour when my first went there. Went to $16. Now I'm on salary. So it's like, keep striving. You know, always push for more. That's just good. Don't give up. Because like now, yeah, I start out at 50-something. Then you get a route, you make anywhere from 65 to 100. But, you know, set some goals and then just reach for your goals. Set small-term goals to reach for your big term, long-term.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I love that. I love that. I always ask, kind of the final question is to my guests, that if you had an opportunity to maybe go into the phones or TVs, you know, of every American and say something about returning citizens, ex-offenders, what would you say?
I'll say always give a person a chance because you don't know their story. Don't look at a person for their past, for where they've been. Look at them from where they're trying to go. And what they're doing at the time.
Beautiful, beautiful. I just thank you, Wendell. This really, I really enjoyed our time, our conversation. Your story is beautiful, and I'm looking forward to see, you know, as you continue to reach your goals and to embrace your family and grow and impact the nation, because that's what Mission Possible is all about, is showing how returning citizens really are making a difference in how they are living life and they are contributing to our society in a very positive way. And you are a definite example of that. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for giving me the time.
You're welcome.
We need strategies and tactics to help us maneuver through life's challenges. Listen up. Coach Nate's insightful words help bring sound and practical perspective. Nate?
Hey, human. Coach Nate here with today's battle plan. Today, I want to talk about kindness. It was Scott Adams who said, "Remember, there's no such thing as a small act of kindness. Every act creates a ripple with no logical end." Creating a ripple, you take a pebble, you throw it in a still lake of water, and you can see that expand Sometimes, depending on the size of that stone, it could expand throughout most of the lake. The same is true with kindness. Well, why does that matter? I'll give you three reasons. One, it's free. Two, for others. And three, for yourself. Being kind, sowing seeds of kindness, doesn't cost you a dime. Kindness is inherent. It's a natural thing within us. Evil, meanness, that's learned behavior. So it doesn't cost you a dime to be kind. Kindness spreads to others. The impact it can have on other people is priceless. You never know what a person is going through, what they're facing in their life, how a simple smile can change a person's entire day, their outlook. They could be feeling down, and just by you unexpectedly giving them a smile, as opposed to a frown that they may be expecting, can change their outlook, their mindset, their attitude. Subconsciously, they may not even know it. And then they go on to spread that and share that with other individuals. Kindness is contagious, again, mainly because of its inherent nature, our inherent nature, how it's built inside of us naturally. Meanness is learned, mimicked, it's fake, where kindness is genuine. The last reason, this thing called life, there's a wheel that goes around. What you place on that wheel eventually comes back around and is over your head, and that falls on you. So when that wheel comes around and you have an opportunity to place kindness on it, when that goes around, that's what's going to fall on you. You probably want to refrain from placing nails or other negative things on that wheel, placing it down. So don't look down on other people. Find an opportunity to be kind, to give kindness. It will come back to you. Those are three good reasons on why kindness matters in this world that we live in. It's free for others. And if you're not moved by those first two reasons, for yourself. We reap what we sow. Sow seeds of kindness, because you'll never know when you'll need that harvest of kindness in your own life. Until next time, this is Coach Nate. Live your best life on purpose now.
Thanks, Coach. This podcast interview was very personal to me. I took this would-have-been-private conversation and made it public. Why? Well, first, to maintain the integrity of my guests. These are real people with real stories managing day-to-day challenges for real, for the good. Secondly, I wanted Wendell to know publicly my niece's life matters to me, and she's not going to slip through the cracks. And I honestly believe he's a good dude. Regardless of how he became incarcerated, he's out now. No, he's not perfect, but he's doing some good things with his life. I'm celebrating that, and him, for not only what I see now, but the man and father that he is to evolve. No pressure, just broadcasted listeners across iTunes, Spotify, and 10 plus platforms. These are my witnesses. The work and service of Mission to Mobilization is changing perception about returning citizens. We tell and train the truth. I wanted to share with you that in one of our walk a month simulations, a woman was in the corner sobbing after she recognized her attitude about returning citizens. Another Fortune 500 executive was incensed by how he had been treated as an ex-offender in our workshop. I loved it. When you change the mind, the behavior will follow. Our work and research has infused challenges, obstacles, and outstanding successes that are changing the narrative about the men and women we love and are now getting to know. Call and speak to one of our mobilizers about how your organization will have the opportunity to change lives and get business exposure. When you book an event, you will receive free registration for up to 5 guests. That's the Walk a Month workshop. Or get involved in the Buy for Returning Citizen campaign. That's shopping with companies that hire ex-offenders.
Free families, life groups, and friendly congregations is another way that you can support. Mission Demobilization is using workshops, media, and community networks to reduce judgment, increase margins, and influence laws discriminating against returning citizens. Go online or call and set up your free consultation. I'm Sheila Murphy, and this is Mission Possible. Don't forget to visit natebattle.com for today's battle plan. Until next time,
create your battle plan
and make your mission possible.